Human, Hendricks versus Plambeck. Ms. Haggard.
Thank you for hearing the case today. May it please this honorable court. My name is Brandy Haggard, and I'm here on behalf of the appellants, James Hendricks and James Smith. There are four issues that we'd like to bring to the court's attention today. The first one involves substantive due process, specifically notice, service of process, and opportunity to be heard, whether or not there was an inverse condemnation action here, or their administrative remedies were exhausted, or there was an exception under the Williamson County case, or whether there was a government purpose. The third issue is whether Mr. Smith had standing in this case.
Wasn't the government here, wasn't the city just abating a nuisance?
No, Your Honor, that's more detailed than that. And in fact,
the
warrants that were issued in this
case. The building is dangerously collapsing and seems to be abandoned and full of junk and so on.
Your Honor, the warrants that were issued by the city.
Pardon?
The warrants that were issued, first of all, there was no notice of the issue. But to answer your question directly, it only involved the warrant that was issued, a structure that was attached to a main building at 1409 East Washington Street. It was a small cement cylinder block building where the roof was caving in. And the warrant that's in the record, specifically at the end of it, says to wit the cement structure concrete block building attached to the rear of the main building. From the observations of the people who viewed the building, they noted that the structural integrity from the exterior of the building did not warrant any action at the time, or it seemed to appear to be structurally sound. Does that answer Your Honor's question?
So why did they knock it down?
That's exactly what we don't understand, why they knocked it down. They exceeded the warrant that was issued. They didn't give proper notice to Darlene Smith, who was the previous landowner. And basically, even in the opinion of the district court, Judge Barker stated they attempted to give her notice. They attempted to give her notice. And then there's a material issue of fact here as far as whether or not there was notice. And the city, you can argue that they knew there wasn't proper notice in this case at all. And that's why they have the timeline problems as far as when there was an intervention, when there were the other motions filed by the parties in this case. Specifically, the city knew that there wasn't notice to Darlene Ramsey, who was the prior owner of the property, and attempted to cure that by following Indiana Trial Rule 4.13 and giving public notice through publication. And on top of that, the city of Indianapolis did not follow Indiana Trial Rule 4.13. Specifically, that requires that they file a precipice with the court, and then after the precipice, that they give specific information as to who owns the property, what the cause of action entails, and why they're being summoned. And it also requires three specific instances of publication. But also, we have a bigger problem than that under Mennonite versus Adams. It's a U.S. Supreme Court case that says, you know what, if there's a res involved here, simply putting a placard on a building or getting a returned envelope or leaving something and a last known address isn't sufficient. But even to do that, to try and cure that, the city of Indianapolis tried to do it by publication and didn't follow the own rules for notice.
Well, what was Mr. Smith's interest?
Mr. Smith's interest, and that was a red herring. It came out in the deposition that he was a common law husband of Darlene Ramsey, and that was completely and wholly irrelevant.
What about Hendricks?
Hendricks owned the property. He purchased the property from Darlene Ramsey in April. So I mean,
but he sat still during the hearing, though.
Right, and so she tried, when she did find out that there had already been an order issued, it already was past the 10-day expiration period to appeal the administrative decision. So at that juncture, she was waiting to see whether or not they were going to cure the defect with notice. And then once they didn't cure the defect with notice, Mr. Hendricks, which really is only 3 days after the decision was denied, tried to intervene. He also applied for building permits and tried to fix the out structure. So when they did issue the opinion, the warrants in the opinion only applied to this back building. They had no business being in the interior of the main structure to begin with. And if Your Honors will look in the record, it's clear from those pictures that what we're dealing with here is a building that's been closed for a short period of time and that there was some damage in the interior of the property, but it wasn't structural, Your Honors. It was merely things that could be fixed for a few thousand dollars.
You still have these intertwining issues that Mr. Hendricks worked for Stern?
That's a material fact.
Is that your firm, Stern?
Whatever. No, Your Honor, I'm not associated with Mr. Stern.
You're not affiliated with that at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay,
I'm
now that's who's on the, least the brief here. So you're that's not correct, huh?
Right, and that's another issue here that again we think is another red herring, because Mr. Hendricks, I believe, in his affidavit, in his deposition, said that he's not an employee of Mr. Stern. That was something that the Honorable Judge Barker entered into the opinion based on what she observed their relationship.
Why does Stern have Hendricks in his email address?
It's my understanding that Mr. Hendricks occasionally helps Mr. Stern because Mr. Stern isn't technologically proficient.
Why is his name in the email address?
You know what, Your Honor? All I know is that he helps Mr. Stern because he's not the most technologically proficient attorney. That's the extent of my knowledge.
Technologically proficient to have an email address in your own name.
I think that Mr. Stern's remedied that problem since this action has been initiated based on these allegations, that he has his own email address now.
He has Hendricks.
Yes. Originally, Hendricks was brought the state action pro se as well. And then that's another...
Is there a common law marriage in Indiana?
No, sir, there's not, but... There wasn't anything in the record to indicate that there wasn't common law marriage from Texas or elsewhere, but it's really irrelevant because
You're substitute counsel then? You're two
yes,
taking
I'm
over
here
this
to
case?
Argue.
Somebody assigned you to this, or is this pro bono? What are you doing?
At this case, if the district court's decision isn't reversed, it'll be pro bono. I'm not being paid. I'm here today gratuitously unless there would be further proceedings in this matter. For the experience and...
Made an appearance in our court?
Yes, I did, Your Honor. Yes, I did. Just for the honor of being here and being able to make these arguments that I think that are very serious as far as substantive due process, notice, and takings under the Fifth Amendment without just compensation. Going back to the other arguments, as far as whether or not he was a common law husband that you asked, Your Honor... a common law marriage. No, Indiana does not recognize that. That came out in his deposition.
I didn't ask that. I knew that.
I apologize. But it's a red herring because what happened is that Mr. Smith had personal property in the building. And in the middle of the night, the entire structure, when the order went to just the out structure, was destroyed. Really? And it was before the court had an opportunity to rule on Mr. Hendricks' motion to intervene. So that wasn't ruled upon until months later. So... as far as practice goes, that should have either been set aside, or I mean stayed during the pendency of that motion, or vacated.
I can't figure out who owned this property.
Mr. Hendricks owns the property now. Darlene Ramsey previously owned the property.
She quit claimed the property to Hendricks.
I believe Hendricks. That there was a mortgage and a warranty deed.
Yeah, she quit claimed it to Hendricks while Hendricks was doing whatever he does for Stern or whatever.
And like I said, I believe that that's an issue that's in dispute, that Mr. Hendricks asserts that he is not the employee of Mr. Stern. Okay. And that he gave affidavits and deposition testimony to that fact. Also, we have a serious issue here, too, where we're talking about jurisdiction. I'm going to go ahead and proceed. I see I'm into my rebuttal time. If that's okay with your honors. An issue here as to City of Indianapolis taking something that should be resolved by the state courts of Indiana where it involves a res.
Exhaustion.
And removing it to the district court and then saying, hey, there's no federal jurisdiction. So they use it as a sword and a shield. And then basically what happens is then the court in this instance decides that there are no federal claims and dismisses any potential state law claims, where if it remained in state court, there would have been probably a 12B6 motion on the federal claims, and there still would have been an opportunity to amend the complaint, and there would have been a remedy available to the plaintiffs. In this case, they use it as a sword and a shield. They dismiss all the claims, and we would ask that the property remedy would be to reverse this if there are no federal claims available, to reverse the decision and to remand the state law claims back to the state court.
Well, let me just ask you... My initial question was, why wasn't this just a case about abating a nuisance, which would have nothing to do with compensation or anything? Ramsey or Hendricks or whoever was given notice about the building was a hazard, right?
I would agree, Your Honor, that they had constructive notice, that the rear portion of the building was a hazard, but the warrant and the orders that were issued there was never notice of that. Then there was constructive notice. And if that's all the city had torn down, we wouldn't be here today. I mean, they tore down the entire structure with valuable property inside that caused irreparable damage to the parties.
Well, that was the only value to the building, was what It's personal property, apparently.
No, and the building itself. Well, yeah, I mean, because the rear structure of the building was what was an issue throughout this proceeding, which they never received notice of at all until much later. I see my time's up, Your Honors.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Will?
Thank you. May it please the Court. This Court should affirm the grant of summary judgment, and I'd like to start by correcting a few factual things that I noticed in my opposing counsel's statement. First off, the allegation that there was no notice. Well, that's just simply not the case. The city did everything they could to provide notice to Darlene Ramsey, who was the registered owner of their property. They hand-delivered a copy of the order issued and recorded in Marion County Recorder's Office to her last known address from her tax records from this particular property. Then they mailed that same notice to the same address. Again, it was recorded within the recorder's office. The fact that they physically did not track down, stop her, I guess, with a police officer and serve her notice is irrelevant given the fact that the city did everything they could to provide notice about this property. As to Mr. Hendricks' employ, the allegation that he's no longer in his employ would certainly be news to me because I've been dealing with Mr. Stern through Mr. Hendricks' email address, and I've been dealing with Mr. Stern with Mr. Hendricks for some time and on numerous cases. So if he's not in his employ, that's news to me because I've contacted Mr. Hendricks and called Mr. Stern's office number, and Mr. Hendricks has answered the phone. As to the allegation that why was this building knocked down and was there who owned the property, frankly, the building knocked down because it was a nuisance. There wasn't a warrant to go in and search the building. The warrant was honored. They went into the rear enclosure area. However, when they were in the rear addition, the concrete block addition to the building, they could see from plain view that the interior of the structure was decrepit and falling apart.
It's more than the cement block part, the whole building?
Correct. Once they got into the concrete block addition, they could see the entire interior of the structure, see the roof of the interior of the structure was having problems. The floor of the interior was decayed and falling apart.
Is that what all these pictures are?
Yes, Judge.
That's more than the cement block part?
Correct. And that was the concern, is that once they got into the exterior, and if you'll note in some of the affidavits, they say, we could see the interior. We can't see if the entire structure is dangerous from the interior. But once they got into the interior concrete block section, they could see from plain view that the interior was decrepit and was dangerous from their concern. And that's why they applied for the order for the entire building. And that's why the order was granted for the entire building. Now, as to who owned the property, there was not a mortgage or a warranty deed. It was a quitclaim deed, and it has been provided to the court. And it's important to note that the order that was served upon...
Well, a quitclaim deed passes title just as well as a warranty deed.
Correct. But certainly...
Don't minimize the quitclaim deed.
We don't mean to suggest that Ms. Ramsey still owns any interest in the property. On the contrary, the quitclaim deed transferred all interest, regardless of the title and the clearness of title. And in this case, there was an order of the property. The order itself says that the owner of the property, which at the point she sold the property in April of 2007, Ms. Ramsey was aware of the order because she'd already filed suit for administrative review. At the point that she sold the property, she had a duty to inform Mr. Hendricks of that order to demolish. She did not do that. And if she did, he did not speak up. Certainly by May 7th, by Mr. Hendricks' own deposition testimony, at the hearing before the court on the motion to dismiss the administrative review, Mr. Hendricks was present. Mr. Hendricks was aware of the order to demolish by his own testimony. And Mr. Hendricks said, I did not want to speak up because I wanted to see how the court would rule. He didn't exercise his interest in the property because he was wanted to see if...
Curiosity. He wanted to see how the court was going to rule. He didn't give a damn one way or another.
If Ms. Ramsey won, then he would win. But if Ms. Ramsey lost, he obviously gave up his chance to speak. After that was dismissed, the city proceeded on the order. Now, with regard to whether there needs to be an inverse condemnation action, I think the case law in the circuit is clear, and this case law in Indiana is clear, that it is a requirement. The plaintiff, in their reply brief, argued that public use exempts them.
Your position just that this was abating a nuisance, so it was not a taking for a public use? I mean, did the city take it? take its pro- and use, is it using it for something?
Well, in fact, that's a very good point, because the Indiana Court of Appeals has held that abating a nuisance is a public use. But the point of the Williamson County and SGB Financial
Services... You don't have to pay compensation, do you, when you abate a nuisance?
That would be a question for the Indiana courts, and that's what SGB Financial Services says.
No, but abating a nuisance? I mean, if traditional public nuisance was a bordello, okay? So if they destroy a bordello, do they have to pay the madam the value of the bordello?
No. And the Indiana law is would certainly lean towards that. But what the plaintiff has asked the court to do is to divine what the Indiana courts would do in this circumstance and whether they would find a taking and whether they would find the inverse condemnation and the remuneration is possible. Well, there are Indiana cases that say that because it is for the health and safety of the other people in the community, that they would not have to be compensated. But the point of this court's case law interpreting Williamson County is that's a question for the state courts. And this court should not, nor the district court, should be divining in a Section 1983 lawsuit what could be actually determined in an inverse condemnation lawsuit.
So now it's just a piece of scraped property, right?
From my understanding, yes, it is a property without a building on it.
And the next thing would be a tax lien.
I think there may be, but I can't guarantee that to the court.
Okay.
With regard to whether or not the city attempted to cure any service of process or whether there's a due process claim, it bears noting that the district court addressed this point squarely and appropriately by saying that the due process claim, based on the same facts as the takings clause claim, is bound by the same determination under Williamson County. You can't change the title and attempt to avoid the requirements of the procedural requirements of the Supreme Court, and that's what the plaintiff has attempted to do here today. They've also attempted to interpret this or declare this a jurisdictional gotcha where we removed the case to federal court and then had the case dismissed. Well, that's not true for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the Indiana courts have interpreted this court's rulings and the Williamson County decisions exactly the same, and they require an inverse condemnation claim to be brought prior to a Section 1983 claim, and the result would be the same. Moreover, this is not a jurisdictional issue. It's a rightness issue. The Supreme Court has said not that the federal courts don't have jurisdiction over Section 1983 claim. They've said that there is no taking. That is an element of the claim of a takings clause claim under the Fifth Amendment, and because they have not stated that element, the plaintiffs don't have a claim. And until they've addressed the inverse condemnation claim, and
they tore it down, didn't they?
Yes.
Well, you don't think that's taking?
Not according to the Supreme Court, Your Honor, because according to the Supreme Court, the taking is completed upon the denial of compensation.
Like Humpty Dumpty. You mean if they come in and tear my house down, they haven't taken it?
Under the Fifth Amendment's taking clause, that is the ruling of the Supreme Court, yes. And until that's changed, it would be incumbent upon yourself to go and seek compensation for that public taking. And if you're denied at that point, then the taking is complete. And
Judge Posner is absolutely correct. You can tear down a nuisance. He used a different analogy than I would have as to what the difficult one is. It's a building that poses a hazard to people going by or staying there because it's not being taken care of and it might collapse and kill somebody.
Correct.
And then it becomes a public nuisance, and then they can abate the public nuisance after notice, giving notice to the owner, saying either tear it down, fix it up, or we will.
Correct. And under that analysis, the analysis would be under a public use. Was it taken for public use? Was it taken to abate a nuisance? Well, the Indiana Supreme Court has recently held, last year, that the public use element of an inverse condemnation action is a question for the Indiana courts.
Yep, there you are.
Well, presumably it has no value when they tear it down.
I don't believe this building did.
Well, yeah, but it costs more to tear it down than what it's worth. I guess that's one way of looking at it.
Otherwise, if they
tore it down and it happens to be Walmart wants it, well, then maybe they've got something more valuable than what was there.
Correct.
All right.
Certainly, the photos that we provided in the supplemental appendix bear witness to that, that the building was in disrepair, was not being used for anything.
Neighborhood.
Not particularly. It's actually very close to downtown Indianapolis, and within a mile of it. No. Downtown Indianapolis is an excellent neighborhood. I live there myself.
Times Square of Indianapolis.
It's actually the building itself is not in good shape. It is adjacent to some areas that are probably less than good, but it also is on Washington Street and is adjacent to some very nice areas as well.
Well, that does make the argument that torn down building, now that vacant land is probably more valuable than it was.
I would agree with that.
So maybe they do have it.
And Mr. Hendricks is still the owner of the property.
There was no cross appeal by the city. He gets the property by tearing down the building.
Well, if he's still got title, I guess he can do something with it.
No, but I was struck by the irony myself.
Isn't there a lien on the property for tearing it down then, for value?
Again, I don't know specifically, but I would venture to say yes.
Yeah, probably.
Again, based on the evidence, Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Well, we'll still. Ms. Haggard, do you have anything further? Very briefly.
And quickly, I think that there's a couple of statements there that were incorrect, and we don't really want to get into whether or not the building was more valuable than the empty lot or anything like that, but the city's arguments that there was proper notice is just clearly not the case. And there wasn't a sleight of hand here or something to try and, like, you know, switch the ownership of the property or argue that there wasn't notice. Ms. Ramsey's position is that she just didn't want to deal with the property anymore. Previously, as far as, and I guess this is maybe the most important thing, is that this main building was a historical building. It was built in 1896. It was not structurally damaged. There was not anything that wasn't cosmetic or couldn't be fixed. From the exterior of the building, someone walking down the street wasn't going to be harmed. It wasn't a public nuisance. And the city, as far as a public use or exceeding public use or whether or not there was a right for we had an ability to bring an inverse condemnation action, it was outside of a public use because the main structure of the building was never, ever part of the proceedings at any point in time. And I think that's a really critical part. And then they sit here and say, hey, you know, we think they're federal claims, and it is a procedural sleight of hand, and then the plaintiffs are left without a remedy. And to say that this property without a structure on it is valueless, is worth more, is not true. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Haggard and Mr. Will, and the court will be in recess until.